How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
In Louisiana, a businessman who owned a photo booth is arrested on 52 counts of child rape. In Hawaii, a 1991 murder suspect commits suicide just hours after submitting his DNA. And in Idaho, prosecutors seek the death penalty after an escapee commits murder. These stories and more coming at you today, Wednesday, August 7th, on Real Life, Real Crime Daily, and I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
Hump Day Wednesday.
Hump Day Wednesday, hot day.
It is indeed.
Hot, too hot.
Man, let me tell you something. We talked about the Olympics a couple times. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, I don't know if you saw or if you've ever seen them do the high jump in the Olympics.
I not this year, but I have seen them do it.
I watched the girls do the high jump, and they're like kangaroos, man. Yep. It's like they're on springs.
Yep, for real. My
And they're jumping like 6'8" in the air over a bar.
It's crazy, right?
It's nuts. Talent, man.
My roommate in college, Sean Brady, whose dad was a federal judge here in Baton Rouge, who went to law school with my parents. They were friends, but he's dead now. He ran track and field for Southeastern.
Yeah.
And then he ended up coaching, being like a volunteer assistant coach or something on the LSU women's track team. Then he went to Scotland, was head of their track team, the country, mm-hmm. Scottish international track team. Then whatever, different colleges like Utah, and became head track coach for Southeastern. Now I think he's at Texas A&M or something. But he used to do all that shit. The pole vaulting, the fucking.
Oh, yeah.
I could watch some practice and be like, I ain't.
I never even tried to do that. Look, I threw the shot,
discus. Me too. That's what the big boys do.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I watched the shot put side of it this year. Those guys are giants, man. 6'7", 320, throwing it 20, 30 feet, this man, big, heavy like shot.
Three times further, I think.
Oh, yeah, minutes. Man.
But anyway, with that being said, let's get down to some true crime time for Wednesday.
We're going to start out in Walker, Louisiana.
Right down the street.
5 miles. And the Walker Police Department has arrested a man on multiple charges in connection with the alleged rape of a minor. According to police, Mark A. Roger, who is 66, is charged with 52 counts of first-degree rape of a victim under the age of 13, 8 counts of felony carnal knowledge of a juvenile, and 8 counts of felony crimes against nature. What is that?
Sodomy, probably.
Authorities say Rager was initially arrested on July 27th on one count of each of the two latter charges. But upon further investigations, authorities discovered Rager had been abusing the victim in 2022, and additional charges and counts were added. Rager was booked into the Livingston Parish Detention Center, and his bond has been set at $5,250,000, according to officials. And this dude, I actually looked up his Facebook, and he apparently owned a mobile photo booth for birthday parties and shit,
really?
Which is really even extra fucked up, in my opinion.
Always with kids, huh?
Yeah.
They changed it from ag rape to first-degree rape and all that, but I don't know if it's the new one has it, but the old ag rape, it was 12, and they moved it up to 13, but you used to get the death penalty for that. And the only in the history of the state of Louisiana, only one person got the death penalty. It was a guy out of Jefferson Parish, but they ended up turning it commuted to life. And I thought I was going to get the death penalty on David Constance's case, but they didn't go for it.
Well, I'll tell you, this is a perfect example of the castration law that they just passed.
And, absolutely.
And but that's life in prison, isn't it? If you get convicted of first degree rape,
life in prison is same. I mean, you might as well have been a serial killer.
Good.
And you would do a hard time.
Right? Yeah.
Well, the killers, at least killer respect the killer. Nobody respects a fucking child or molester, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, whatever. Fuck him. Angola, he's a coming. It might take a while, but he's coming. Livingston Parish, I know y'all listening to. He's there. Give him some justice. All right. Let's go out to Boise, Idaho. All right. And an Idaho prosecutor says he will seek the death penalty against an Idaho inmate charged with killing a man while he was on the lam during a 36-hour escape from prison. So Skylar Mead, 32, has already been sentenced to life in prison after pleading guilty to the March escape from a Boise hospital where prison officials had taken him for treatment of self-inflicted injuries. But the first-degree murder charge is in a different county, and Mead has not yet had the opportunity to enter a plea in that case. Now, Mead's defense attorney, Rick Cuddy, did not immediately respond to questions about this incident. But the Nez Perce County prosecutor, Justin Coleman, announced Friday he will seek the death penalty if Mead is convicted in the shooting death of James Mahoney. After long and careful consideration, I have decided to seek the death penalty in this case, Coleman wrote in a press release. The senseless and random killing of Mr. Mahoney and the facts surrounding what led to his death warrants this determination, the ultimate punishment. The Mead's alleged accomplice in the escape, Nicholas Umpanar, 29, has also been indicted in connection with Mahoney's death and had not yet had the opportunity to enter a plea. But Umpanar is also awaiting trial on charges, including aggravated battery and aiding and abetting escape after a judge entered a not guilty plea on his behalf. So this dude got out. Dude's what does. I don't know all the details on it, but it's probably pretty bad.
Yeah.
But they killed him. And, it's just like if you go to rob a bank and you leave and you don't kill anybody and you get in a high-speed pursuit and you kill someone on it, you can still be charged with the first degree.
Absolutely. You're
it's all part of that. You escape. You know what you're doing when you escape. You killed somebody. Fuck you.
Yeah, and how he escaped would be the –
Right, yeah, we talked about that a bunch from the hospital.
Yeah.
He cut him, I'm imagining he was cutting
on himself. It's common. It's one of the most, as you said, it's one of the most common. And that and transfers to court.
Well, they know when they're inside the wire that it's going to be a whole lot harder to escape.
Yeah.
Right? So anytime you have a chance to get outside of the wire, that's your opportunity. And it is human nature. I told you that in some South American countries, it's not even illegal to escape. They said it's human nature. They expect you to want to escape. So you escape and they catch you and they come back to you get more time.
That's crazy.
So there you have it.
Well, we're going to tell you about, we talk a lot about DNA and how it's advanced catching these criminals in these cold cases.
Right. I love it. Yeah.
They're catching them left and right now. As a matter of fact, Golden State Killer, which that guy went missing or they didn't know who it was forever, catching him on DNA.
Familiar DNA, yeah.
Yep. So a 1991 murder suspect recently got approached to get his DNA. He was identified as a suspect in the 1991 murder of a 23-year-old woman. And he actually killed himself after he gave his swab. So that might give him a clue that he might have did it.
Yeah, the gig is up.
Yeah, so they swabbed this guy's cheek. This is in Hawaii. His name was Albert Lorio Jr. He was 57, and he was identified as a suspect in the murder of Dana Ireland, who had been kidnapped and raped in the Kapoho area of Hawaii on December 24th of 1991. She died a day later at a local hospital. The police said the case is still under investigation, but that Albert Lorio Jr. had been linked to the victim by DNA. However, his exact involvement is still under investigation, and his death was ruled a suicide by a forensic pathologist. DNA evidence had been recovered from a swab taken from Ireland's body, from a sheet used to transport her to the hospital, and from a T-shirt found at the scene and was used by police to identify a suspect in her murder this month. At the time of the murder, there was no match for the evidence in any DNA database. Of course, in the 90s, I mean, right. They didn't really have much of a database. Right. In 2008, the DNA evidence was sent to the Forensic Analytical Crime Lab in California, and additional DNA evidence was collected from the T-shirt, which matched other samples from the scene. DNA experts are now able to take data from a DNA sample and build a family tree based on known DNA from relatives, what Woody just referred to as familial DNA. Earlier this year, an FBI agent from the Honolulu field office contacted police investigators with the names of some people who could potentially match the DNA sample, including Lorio Jr. Lorio Jr. lived in the Kapoho area at the time of the murder, so police surveilled him, eventually collecting a utensil that he had been using and then threw away. The DNA collected from the utensil matched the DNA evidence connected at the crime. The evidence established a probable cause for the crime of rape. The statute of limitations for that crime had ran out, but investigators were able to continue to investigate the case as a murder. Though they did not have enough evidence to establish probable cause and arrest Lorio. Investigators obtained a court order for a cheek swab from the suspect and asked him to come to the station and talk to investigators, but he was not taken into custody at that time. After the swab was taken, he asked to leave and was allowed to do so. The swab then matched DNA taken from the scene of the crime 33 years ago. The Fourth Amendment protects individuals from unwanted search and seizure, Hawaii Police Chief Benjamin Mazowski said in a statement. In order to obtain a search warrant, investigators would have to establish probable cause for the crime of murder and explained specifically what evidence it was seeking. We remain focused on Dana Ireland, a young woman who was brutally murdered. There's a lot about this case that we do not know, and our investigation into this case continues to push forward. Our search for the truth is not over. But I guess they're going to try to basically rule everybody else except this guy. Yeah. And
they'll continue doing it. And if they really suspect him, I mean, the guy smoked or whatever, goes in a public place and drinks a Coke at McDonald's or whatever and throws it away, they could take that.
Yeah.
There's no reasonable expectation of privacy on stuff like that. But he killed
himself. He killed himself, and that's kind of to me. The fact that he killed himself is pretty, it may not be evidence of a crime, but why would you do that if you were innocent?
Well, they go, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you would, but maybe some people would. I don't know. But while you're talking about DNA, this one's just a little bit long. Y'all bear with me on it, okay? So newly found DNA could shed light on Monster of Florence, serial killer case decades after mysterious murders of couples. Right? Yeah. So newly discovered DNA could shed light on one of Italy's most famous cold cases, finally revealing the Monster of Florence serial killer who murdered young couples in the 1970s and 80s. Now, more than half a century since the first shocking murders happened in Tuscany, but there's doubt over the murder or murderers continues to cloud the case, even though three different men have been convicted and sent to prison over the years for some of the more than 14 murders that happened.
Hmm.
Yeah, so they're still in the question. Like I said, but some are still unaccounted for. Many questions remain. Now, a new scientific finding has given hope to some of the victims' families, even while experts advise caution. A prominent Italian doctor practicing oncology and hematology in the United States studied earlier analysis of DNA samples from a .22-caliber Winchester bullet found in 2015 in a cushion belonging to Nadine Moreau and Jean-Michel Crocevelli, French couple who were shot dead in their camping tent in 1985. That same DNA was taken from a similar bullets found after the September 1983 murder of two German university students, Horst William Mayer and Jens Urush, who investigators believe were probably mistaken for a couple, and the murder of Italians Pia Rotoni and Claudio Stefanacci in July 1984. So this one DNA bullet was found, well, the same DNA was found at all three murder scenes, and they find it in his couch, right?
Yeah.
One bullet, right? So, but now they, of course, like you just said, they got the capability to test it. If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject?
Now.
Is your child ahead,
real life,
not getting challenged enough in class?
Get an exclusive
IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English,
today.
Language arts,
visit
science, and social studies while adopting to each child,
to get the most meeting them where they are. Program
plus,
out there
IXL
at the best
encourages
price.
Students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the ninth grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting, IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized, kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today. to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. The DNA could prove to be very important. Danielle Piccone, a lawyer who chaired an inquiry commission into an unsolved aspect of the case that ended in 2022, told the news. But the monster or monsters of Florence terrorized the capital of Tuscany and its countryside between 1974 and 1985 by murdering 14 people, including six couples, most of whom were shot in their cars during or immediately following sexual intercourse. So they like hidden like the LSU lace where my parents, I would come down there at nighttime and all those cars, we park. I'm like, what are all those cars doing there? They're watching the submarine races.
Yeah, the anyway. Submarine races. That's funny.
Italy was, but nothing funny about this, but Italy was then going through a bloody period of political violence dubbed the Years of Lead, in which the Red Brigades and armed groups of extreme right together and the mafia violence caused thousands of deaths. Now, the murder weapon in the cold case, a Beretta semi-automatic pistol, has never been found, and often the assassin stabbed his victims after death, committing atrocious sexual mutilations on the corpses of the young women, right? So the case was hindered by competition between two investigating authorities, the regular police and then the Cabernini force, as well as between prosecutors and judges. And investigators followed multiple leads from a Sardinian vendetta to the Italian secret services, from a sect to conspiracy nettles. So they had it all going on, looking at everything. But finally, a poor farmer portrayed as a violent and sex-obsessed by prosecutors, his name was Pietro Pasiniani, who was already convicted of homicide in 1951 and imprisoned in 1987 for raping his two daughters. He was sentenced to life in 1994 for at least some of these murders, right? Pasiniani, who called himself innocent as Christ on the cross, was acquitted on appeal 2 years later, but he was awaiting retrial when he died in 1998 of a heart attack at the age of 73. And two of his alleged accomplices, Mario Benigni and Giancarlo Latti, were also found guilty and sent behind bars, and both have since died. Now, in 2007, an FBI profile of the serial killer said the murder acted alone. Well, it just goes on and on, y'all, but it's kind of crazy. They say, we know, according to the medical examiner's report, that, talking about one of the victims, she could have fought with the assassin. It's not impossible to imagine that there remain biological traces on her fingernails. So lawyers for the civil parties in the case are now asking for the DNA to be identified by Iovini to be compared, but with whose? Vera Adrini, a lawyer for the families of the French victims, wants the body of Italian victim Stefanoni Patini murdered, who was murdered in 1974, with her boyfriend Pasquale Giannacore, to be exhumed. We know, according to the medical examiner's report, that she could fault with the assassin, and it's not impossible to imagine that there remain biological traces under her fingernails. Under the same logic, DNA could also be taken from Giannacore's clothing. And according to Iovani, the new DNA does not match that of the victims, nor with anyone convicted over the decades. And for Robert Taddeo, a former lawyer and author of Compendium on the Monster of Florence, the new DNA could be due to contamination by investigators, technicians, or forensic scientists who worked the case. And he recommends the greatest caution, warning against falling into judicial relativism. Anyway, Pasiniani did not die innocent in the eyes of the Italian law. He died before his new trial. That's the guy I told you about, right? Mm-hmm. In prison. So first murder, sometimes attributed to the elusive killer or killers, dates back to 1968 when a woman and her lover were murdered during their clandestine lovemaking in a car. The deceived husband was convicted, right? So he found him, I guess. And years later, investigators discovered that the murder weapon was the famous Beretta from the Monster of Florence killings. Wow. Mm. So, and he ends up dying in prison, and they're pretty sure it's him because of DNA.
Right.
I mean, the same bullet was found in all these bodies, and it's his gun.
Yeah.
And he died in prison for awaiting retrial on one of the murders.
So this was the same exact bullet?
So, no, it's the same. But, you know, they could tell.
When from the striations.
And it's the same calorie emanation. Okay. But his DNA was on the bullet.
Yeah.
So, like, wow. You, when you load the bullet.
Yeah.
I don't
touch DNA.
I don't think that you're going to be able to dig up bodies after all these years and find something under fingernails. You know, your fingernails, there's some myth. People say your hair and your fingernails continue to grow when you
right.
bury, but it's not true. It's just your skin shrinks, so it makes them look longer.
Interesting.
So it may be there, but I doubt it. I mean, I don't know.
And, yeah.
DNA?
In these days, I would think they would cut the nails.
We always bag the hands on the side, see, just in case there was any DNA. You don't know if they scratched somebody or whatever, or gunshot residue.
Right.
Yeah, so we always brown paper bags, little cheap paper bags, and duct tape the hands before you put them in the body bag.
Okay.
That way, if anything came out inside the body bag, you take the body out. You have to look to identify the lock and all that shit at the autopsy place.
Yeah.
Roy and the two Chris's can tell you about this.
Yeah.
And when they cut open the lock, they take the body out. One of the things they do is they shake out the body bag for any kind of hairs or anything that may have fallen off the body.
Right. Interesting.
And then they do the autopsy. DNA.
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 Beep, beep. Oh, we interrupt this episode of Real Life, Real Crime Daily to bring you some breaking news. So look. We pre-record our episodes, and sometimes news comes out that just has to be covered, and there's no way that it can wait until the next time we record. And as soon as Woody left yesterday after recording, there was a couple of breaking news articles that when I saw them, I thought, this just has to be covered. I think y'all will really get some interesting information out of this first one. And we're going all the way to France. And a French pole vaulter named Anthony Amirati. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. And he has been eliminated, sadly, from the 2024 Olympics after his crotch got caught in the crossbar at a qualifying event and sent him crashing to the ground. That's right. Now, the video has gone viral. And it's not, well, it may be what you would think. It is actually his penis that hits the crossbar. Not his crotch, like he racked himself as he was going over the bar. Like he went over the bar. And his penis hit the crossbar. You can clearly see it. It has went viral. So I'll continue with the article. It says that the men's qualifying event for the Paris Olympics, the 21-year-old missed his target height and got his crotch caught on the crossbar, sending it crashing to the mat. Amirati, who reacted by holding the... I'm sorry. Holding the sides of his head upon his own landing, ultimately placed 15th in the contest. It's a big disappointment. The first time Olympian said in a statement, the conditions were good. It's the first time I've started a competition without any stress. As I was a total outsider, I only had one goal to play with the audience, and I was almost there. Despite the unfortunate nature of the incident, Anthony Amirati quickly became a viral sensation on social media, of course. Users across various platforms shared their reactions, mixing humor with encouragement. One user on X wrote, "I mean, if you're trying to be famous for losing the pole vault, this is the way to do it." Oh, I concur. Another one added, "Winning isn't everything. He's going to stroll out of the Olympics with more ladies' phone numbers than medals." So there you have it. I absolutely had to report this when I saw it shortly after Woody left today. And then there was one more that I did see also shortly after Woody left that I wanted to bring to you. And it is a pretty astonishing circumstance here. Hurricane Debbie brought more than powerful winds and storm surge to Florida. Packages of cocaine worth more than $1 million also made landfall, officials say, marking the latest in a string of recent discoveries of drugs along the Florida shores. Debbie, which slammed into the state as a Category 1 hurricane but has since been downgraded to a tropical storm, washed the drugs ashore in the Florida Keys. This from U.S. Border Patrol Acting Chief Agent Samuel Briggs II. Hurricane Debbie blew 25 packages of cocaine onto the beach, totaling 70 pounds in the Florida Keys, and he actually posted two images of those packages. Briggs said the trove of drugs, which has a street value of more than $1 million, was found by a Good Samaritan who contacted the authorities. I'd say he was a Good Samaritan. Cocaine has been found on numerous occasions on and near the shores of Florida, which is not far from the Caribbean transit hub for drugs being trafficked from South America to the U.S. and Europe. In June, recreational boaters off the coast of the Florida Keys found 65 pounds of cocaine floating in the ocean. And earlier that month, divers found 25 kilos of cocaine about 100 feet underwater off Key West. The very next day, the same amount of suspected cocaine was found washed up on Dolphin Island, Alabama. And we reported on the Dolphin Island situation. So there you have it. Hurricanes bringing more than wind and rain, also bringing a little bit of snow. And that has been a little bit of breaking news for you right here on Real Life Real Crime Daily.
Hey, everybody, it's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause. It promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings. It improves sleep quality. It reduces bloating and gas. It relieves hot flashes. It can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it. But it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
Get 15% off a set of Brake Best Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, we're going to go to East Baton Rouge Parish, and this is just a short but sweet one. Well, not sweet, but very short. Infuriating nonetheless. Deputies are investigating after an infant was forgotten in the back seat of a car and died on Tuesday afternoon. The East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office said the parent left their work Tuesday morning to bring the six-month-old child to daycare before work. Deputies said the parent continued on to work and did not realize until going to pick the baby up from daycare in the evening that the child had been in the car all day. The infant was found around 5:45 p.m. in the back seat of the car along East Tom Stokes Court. And there's not a whole lot more information out there. Man, that's about as awful as it gets. And it was, you know, 100 degrees outside.
Yeah, it'd be 180 in a car or more. They've actually done the studies. I only saw one on Courtney Coco's car that GM did on the Pontiacs, what the temperature would be inside the regular car, that not the trunk.
Yeah.
Where she got so badly decomposed because of the heat. It's fucking ridiculous. It's like 140 something degrees on an 80 degree day or 90 degree day.
Yeah.
And I mean, they've done
it's like being in an attic.
So, yeah. I mean, you can't. What are you going to do? I don't know. I mean,
and it sounds like this parent didn't even realize, you know, that actually left to go pick the child up from daycare after work, thinking that the baby had been dropped off and it's in the back seat. The baby.
Horrible. I don't know what you do. I mean, you know, I know you're a dad and I'm a dad. About to be a granddad. I don't know what you can do with that. I don't know. But I'm going to tell you about another dude that shouldn't have been a dad. He's a piece of shit. In Batavia, Ohio, a man has been sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole in the shooting deaths of his three young sons at their Ohio home last year. I'm sure we reported on this, but this is an update. A Clermont County judge sentenced Chad Doerman, 33, on Friday to three consecutive life terms after he pleaded guilty to aggravated murder charges. He was also sentenced to another 16 years on two felonious assault charges for injuring his former wife and his stepdaughter. And a prosecutor, Mark Tacolvi, had originally vowed to seek the death penalty for the murders of Clayton Doerman, 7, Hunter Doerman, 4, and Chase Doerman, 3. And that was in the Monroe Township, about 75 miles west of Columbus, Ohio. But on Friday, he said that the trauma that the surviving family members experienced that day and continue to experience on a daily basis, you know, basically he didn't want to continue to put them through it. He said, my job as I saw it this week was to relieve them of that additional agony. And prosecutors earlier said that Doerman, who was taken into custody after he was found sitting on a stoop at the home, admitted to having planned the killings and chased down one of the boys in the field after he tried to run free. And the defense attorneys, you know, like they always do, try to say he was struggling with mental illness, right? But Laura Doerman, the children's mother and ex-wife of the defendant, cried as the prosecutor read a statement in court from her saying, her life had been ripped away from me and destroyed. I would do anything to push them on the swing, cover them up one more time, and hear their little ways of saying, I love you, she said. She said, I have anger, frustration, and so much sadness. Grief will never go away because it's all the love that is left with no place to go. And then another statement issued through prosecutors after the sentencing, she said that she was in full agreement with the resolution of the case. No punishment will ever bring my boys back, she wrote. Having a guarantee that he will spend the rest of his life behind bars is what is best for my family. Now, the prosecutor said he plans to reveal more details about the case at a news conference. And Laura Doerman thanked the prosecutors and the first responders and asked for privacy, saying that she and her family grieve every day for the boys. But she also asked the people to remember the children as they were before the events of that day.
Wow.
Ah, what did he chase for? Jeez. 7, 4, and 2 or 3, whatever. Chase the one out into the field and kill him. I don't know.
Well, we're going to try to lighten it up a little bit. And, you know, policing has certainly gotten easier over the years. Not that it's easy by any means, but DNA and all that sort of stuff helps. All the cameras they have now and all that stuff sure helps. Police officers track down criminals. But sometimes the criminals themselves make it even easier. And for this segment, it's going to be a WTF. And that's what I said when I read this one. Now, if you would prefer the police not find your bag of drugs, perhaps consider placing the illegal narcotics into something other than a container marked bag of drugs. I shit you not.
Prisons are full of dummies.
Cops report that Lauren Riley was a passenger in a car that was pulled over Saturday morning after the driver was spotted without a seatbelt. During that traffic stop, officers noticed Riley moving around items on the vehicle's floorboard. When police peered into the auto, they spotted drug paraphernalia, which prompted a probable cause examination. So if you roll down your window and they smell weed, for example, and you're in a state where weed's illegal, they can then search whether you want them to or not.
That's correct.
So that prompted a probable cause examination of the vehicle and its contents, and that resulted search, according to police, turned up a bag inside Riley's purse labeled bag of drugs. No. Inside the bag, cops said, was a needle, straws, a metal spoon, four glass pipes, and plastic baggies with a white-colored residue.
Nice.
A bag inside the drugs bag contained crack cocaine, powder cocaine, crystal meth, Xanax, and other narcotics. The discovery of the bag of drugs resulted in Riley's arrest on a variety of felony charges and, of course, a few misdemeanors. And she is being held in a Florida County lockup. Her quote-unquote bag of drugs is being held in a police evidence locker.
That's so funny, bro.
Yeah. Bag of drugs.
Bag of drugs. And she bent it.
Yeah.
She had three or four different types.
In case she couldn't remember what that bag was. So that's the bag of drugs.
It's got this good shit in it.
Yeah. I don't want to forget what is in this bag. I
wonder how much fentanyl was in that bag. That's crazy.
Bag of drugs.
You might find crack in a Xanax or meth in a Xanax, something like that. But finding crack and meth and all that uppers together.
Yeah,
fucked up.
Oh yeah,
the bag of drugs.
Bag of drugs. She going to the Olympic Village probably.
Just some of that hooking up in the Olympic Village.
Now they done lifted the law.
Yes, an English professor in Colorado was arrested on Tuesday on suspicion of murder after police found his wife bleeding and injured. His wife was bleeding and injured, and his infant daughter was dead. Right. And authorities said Regis University professor Nicholas Michaelbust, 44, called first responders on Monday to report that he had found his wife on the floor inside their home and that their infant daughter was not breathing. The Denver Post reported Tuesday that Michaelbust told police he had woken up from a nap to find his wife, 44-year-old Saran Kim, on the ground bleeding. And then he believed she must have fallen from a stepladder in the bedroom. When the fuck gets on the stepladder in the bedroom while you're taking a nap? Officers who arrived at the scene did not see evidence of that. Kim had multiple blunt force injuries to her head and face, not consistent with the fall. Though the medical examiner has not released her official cause of death. Their daughter was found in a bedroom without visible injuries, but she was pronounced dead at the scene. Detectives observed bruising and blood on Michael Buss's knuckles, along with scratch marks on his neck and chest. And Michael Buss told police that the bruising was skin discoloration and that his wife sometimes scratched his body because of his psoriasis. Right. This motherfucker's got some excuses.
His wife scratched his body because of it?
Well, first of all, she fell off a stepladder while he was taking a nap in their bedroom.
Yeah.
And whatever. So
sounds like some bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Denver Deputy District Attorney Anthony Santos told the judge at Michaelbust's bond hearing that the police had also found bloody gloves in the dryer and on the dryer. And the child that died Monday was the second to die in Michaelbust's custody, according to the Gazette, the newspaper. But prosecutors had told him that at the bond hearing. Now, Michaelbust's first child died in 2021 after suffering skull fractures, but no charges were filed. I guess they thought, I bet they go back and look at it now. Mm-hmm. Well, he must have said, they fell or whatever. An attorney for Michaelbust didn't respond naturally. Regis University says that the news of Michaelbust's arrest was profoundly distressing for the entire community, whatever. But our thoughts and prayers are with everyone affected by the situation, especially the victims' families and all the members of our community. And Jim Chapman, I'm working on a case right now that this girl, it's kind of the same situation. And he got there and he tried to say she fell. And it's obvious. A shotgun blast to the head. We'll get into that later on. But people, I guess they panic and they don't think. I left bloody gloves on the dryer, one in the dryer, one on top.
Well, you remember
my baby's dad.
Shit business forgot a whole head in a bucket. Oh, shit, I forgot his head.
Anyway, that's it. I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Thank you for listening, liking, and tuning in, and sharing, and all that good podcaster shit.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Everton,
your host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.